fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, in the evening.
It was a little over a year ago that former 7th District Congressman Dave Obey, harmonica in hand, appeared in concert with his old friend Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary to raise funds for the David R. Obey Civic Resource Center at UW-Marathon County, where Mr. Obey went to school in the 1950s. The center will be part congressional library, providing access to more than 2 million of Dave Obey's papers and documents, and part learning center, with the goal of inspiring young people to get involved in politics and public service. Now the center is being readied for its grand opening next Wednesday, September 3rd, and Dave Obey is here to talk to us about it with his longtime legislative director, senior policy advisor and friend, Paul Carver. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mr. Obey may have never held the gavel as Speaker of the House, but he did hold a hammer during his 41 years as Northern Wisconsin's congressman. He became one of the most powerful members, chairing the House Appropriations Committee and bringing millions of dollars in improvements and public works projects to his district.
I'd sing out danger, I'd sing out a warning, I'd sing out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land.
David Obey.
If you'd like to talk to former Congressman Dave Obey, tell him what you thought about his service to Northern Wisconsin and his philosophy of government, or if you have questions about the goals of the David R. Obey Civic Resource Center, our lines are open at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Now, the grand opening of the center takes place next Wednesday, September 3rd, at the Center for Civic Engagement on the UW-Marathon County campus in Wausau. It gets underway at 4:30 p.m., and among the keynote speakers, listen to this list, Congressman Sean Duffy, Florida Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, longtime Wisconsin Congressman Tom Petri, Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin, Dave Obey, of course, and special video messages from former Congressman Melvin Laird and former Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. Dave Obey, thank you so much for being with us today. Paul Carver, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Dave, that's quite a lineup for the grand opening on Wednesday. We're all looking forward to it.
Well, it's better than I deserve, but sometimes you get lucky.
Well, we've got the event coordinator for the grand opening, and again, that's next Wednesday, September 3rd, starting at 4:30 here on the UW-Marathon County campus. Ann Lucas, fill us in on some of the details.
Well, thank you for inviting me here today. We've got a lot on our plate. We actually will begin public tours on Wednesday at 4 o'clock. We have a number of UW Marathon campus students that will be giving the tour so that we can show the entire Institute of Public Policy and Service. So we'll have building tours. We will have, there'll be a small reception. We'll have a ribbon cutting that will be at 5:15. And among those cutting the ribbon, in addition to Dave and Joan, will be Keith Montgomery, the dean of the campus, and Brad Carger, the Marathon County administrator. We'll have a special opening video to describe to the public what the Obey Center will do, and then a great ribbon cutting. And then you've already named a number of our speakers who will share, I think, some stories and some fun comments about Congressman Obey and his service.
You know, Ann, not all of these people get along politically.
Well, they will for that day.
And I think that's, you know, that's a testimony to what the center is trying to accomplish. This is not a partisan institute. It's an institute to get people involved in politics and public service and provide as a learning resource access to all of these papers.
Well, that was the vision behind the center, to provide a opportunity for students and the public to learn more about public service, to find out how they can be engaged and productive in our communities and in all the worlds that they operate in. We also will have a UW Marathon campus student speaking in between all those other dignitaries that you mentioned.
Now it's great that you've got our current Congressman, Republican Sean Duffy, on the program.
And he's very happy to be here with us.
Why did you bring Debbie Wasserman Schultz up from Florida? And maybe Dave needs to comment on that. She's a little bit of a firebrand for the Democrats.
Oh, I think she's kind of like a matching firebrand to Dave Obie. You know, she's been a good friend of his, and she wanted to come. And we thought, you know, if you want to come up from Florida and enjoy our wonderful Wisconsin Northwoods, we're glad to have you here.
Well, it's a good time of the year for it. Senator Tammy Baldwin is also on the program. And then those videotaped messages from former 7th District Republican Congressman Mel Laird and Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, those are very special. You know, we were very grateful. We're sorry that Mr. Laird couldn't come up and make the trip, but he was very gracious in allowing us to do a video of him, and the same with Mrs. Pelosi.
Dave Obie, you've always gotten along well with Melvin Laird, a former congressman in this district, a Republican, and also another man on the program, Tom Petri.
Well, Mel and I are good friends, and so are Tom and I. We both, I think, belong to a political era in which you could really fight like the devil during the day on your positions on issues and then still regard each other as friends after five. Mel Laird was a great public servant. Tom Petri was the same. And so I'm happy that both of them are involved in the show. When I started in politics in this state, we had somebody like Warren Knowles, for instance, who was a moderate Republican. His brother, Bob Knowles, was the leader in the state Senate. The Democrats controlled the Assembly, and so we had mixed government, split government, and yet we got an awful lot done because we recognized that the purpose of politicians was not career advancement, but to solve problems. And that's what I would hope the Senate can help contribute to over the next few years.
And, Ann Lucas, there's also a dinner that follows that evening at the Jefferson Street Inn.
There's a special event, and we have a number of other notable people coming to that, and that's a private dinner for Dave and Joan.
Well, we're looking forward to it, and anything you can tell us about what's going on at the future David R. Obie Center. I go down there and I see new things all the time. You've got a desk, you've got flags, you've got a big gavel, and
we've got wonderful photos, and we've got ceremonial shovels that have been used. And the image I want to leave you with, what's going on right now, just think of a duck on a pond that's paddling like crazy underneath to make sure everything is just perfect for Wednesday.
There you go. How will those 2 million pages of documents be stored?
I'm going to leave that to Paul.
All right. Well, and we're going to leave you right now because we know you've got a lot on your plate today.
I'll paddle my way out of here.
Thank you so much, Ann Lucas, the event coordinator for the grand opening of the David R. Obie Civic Resource Center. It's next Wednesday evening at 4:30, and as you just heard, a tremendous lineup of people, including Tammy Baldwin, Sean Duffy, Tom Petri, Debbie Wasserman Schultz from Florida, a mixture of Republicans and Democrats, and we're really looking forward to it. It's right here on the UW Marathon County campus in the new Center for Civic Engagement building. Dave Obie, you went to school here at UW Marathon County. It must be a nice thing to see this center opening on your old campus.
Well, I sure did go to school there back in the 50s, and I think the comparison of the country then and today indicates why it is that we want the center to be functioning. I mean, when I was a student on that campus, there was no Medicare, there was no Medicaid, there was no Clean Water Act or Clean Air Act, there were no four-lane highways in Wisconsin. The budget for the National Institutes of Health that does medical research on every disease you can think of was less than $1 billion versus many times that today. There was no Affordable Health Care Act. There was no OSHA to protect workers' health and safety. And so my point is that even though people are frustrated with politics these days, and even though a lot of people would continue to describe government as an enemy. I defy you to take a look at the changes that have occurred over the past 40 years and tell me that it's been bad for the country. I mean, this country is in far better shape today than it was then because of all those changes. I hope that this center will help to drive that message home.
Paul Carver, you worked with Dave Obey for 28 years.
That's right.
during his 41 years in office as his legislative director and then as his senior policy advisor. Do you share his enthusiasm toward the political process that produced those changes that he just described?
I certainly do. It seems that the American people agree on just about one thing today, and that's Congress isn't working. I take a different perspective on that. I think Congress is actually a great representation of the American people, and what you've got in Congress reflects what you've got throughout the country. I teach course at Virginia Tech in Alexandria, and during that course I try and teach the students to have a greater understanding of Congress and hopefully through that a better appreciation for the Congress. But I used to tell constituents who would come in and anybody else who would listen that if you've got some problems with Congress, you really need to look in the mirror because that's where the problems lie and that's where the solutions to those problems lie.
Now, you're obviously from England.
From London, yes.
What got you interested in the American political system?
I was in college in the 1970s at the University of Essex in England, and I was studying politics and philosophy. And around about 1974, I started studying American politics, and there was a great deal happening in the United States then, particularly the Watergate and the end of the Vietnam War. But my interest in the United States actually dates to as far back as I can remember. And I've just always been interested. What is perhaps a little surprising is that my initial interest was Congress. It wasn't the president and some of the other more sexy features of the American government. I was always interested in Congress, the People's House specifically.
How similar is the United States Congress to the House of Commons in Great Britain?
I can't tell you what the differences are today. I can tell you what the differences are 35 years ago when I was there. And in Parliament, it was very much dominated by the party system. And the majority party ran things through on a regular basis. The best example, perhaps, is when the government introduces its budget. And the Chancellor of the Exchequer gets up and talks to the House of Commons and he can tell you that taxes are going up, and he can tell you that taxes went up last night. And I remember growing up that people would, before the Chancellor was about to make his speech on the budget, they'd run out to the liquor store or go out and buy cigarettes because they knew that taxes on those items were likely to go up once the Chancellor started speaking. That's very different from the situation you have in Congress today, as anyone who's paid any attention to the efforts to address things like the highway gas tax. We have a massive shortfall in the highway trust fund.
But it seems the partisanship, you know, here in the United States, when we see images of the House of Commons, and maybe they're selective about what images we see, it always seems to be people screaming at each other, shouting, booing, hissing, catcalls. It's not that different from the U.S. Congress today, is it?
That's Prime Minister's question time. And quite frankly, I would have loved to have a system where the President of the United States would come down to the well of the House of Representatives and perhaps be grilled by members of Congress the way the Prime Minister in Britain is. It's an interesting development that goes on every week. Every Wednesday, the Prime Minister gets up and does that for half an hour. But that's not the way the system works in Parliament generally.
Dave Obey, how did this Englishman work out for you as your legislative director and senior policy advisor? You kept him around for 28 years.
Well, he started as an unpaid intern and worked his way up from there to the position that he had when I retired. Obviously, if he hadn't been somebody who produced a good top-shelf quality work, I wouldn't have kept him around. And obviously, if he didn't believe in what we were trying to do in the office, he wouldn't have stuck around. So I'm very grateful for his long-time service. I've been blessed by having a number of staff people who stuck with me for a good long time. And that's crucial, because if you don't have institutional memory on your staff, coupled with talent, you really are at a disadvantage in trying to work in the place. So I've been very lucky in that regard.
Now, is it a testimony to your efforts to bring people together, particularly through this David R. Obey Civic Resource Center, that the people speaking at that grand opening include, by videotape, Democrats like Nancy Pelosi, and then in person, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Tammy Baldwin, but also Republicans like Sean Duffy, Tom Petri, and Melvin Laird?
Well, I mean, I think this is, after all, a university operation, and it needs to be bipartisan. I really have not had a whole lot to do with the arrangements for this event. That's been driven by the folks at the university and the other volunteers who put in an awful lot of time to bring this day about. But in the end, I had a lot of experiences in Congress. I had a lot of disappointments, had a lot of successes. But I can tell you, the times when I felt the best about it were not the times when we beat the other guys and things like that. The time that I would feel the best is when we managed to put together a legislative product that had gained broad support on both sides of the aisle. Now, that's become much more scarce in recent years as the process has become much more partisan. Example, when we dealt with the stimulus package, it was obvious from the day one that we were not going to get any Republican help whatsoever. I hope that mindset can be changed over time, because, as I said earlier, just because we have different party labels doesn't mean that we shouldn't be able to work together on occasion in order to solve a problem.
But you know, America is so polarized that it's paralyzed right now. How do we get people to talk to one another and stop demonizing one another?
Well, I think the most important change that has occurred is demonstrated by the poll that the Pew Research Foundation did just about a year ago. They asked the question, do you believe that government has an obligation to help people who cannot help themselves? And when they asked Democrats and the general population that question 25 years ago, it was about 62%, it was about 66% who said yes. And when you asked Republicans in the population the same question, you had a similarly high percentage. I've forgotten exactly, but it was close to 50%.
So even Republicans 25 years ago said government has an obligation to help people who can't help themselves.
Yeah, very strong Democratic support, and Republicans more mild support, but still supportive. Today, you ask that same question, and the Democrats. Democratic support in the general public is still there. It's only dropped about 4%. But support of that proposition on the part of Republican voters has been cut in half. So that's created a huge philosophical difference in the body politic. And I think that's the single most important change that's occurred in our politics. And that leads inevitably to a much more partisan atmosphere, because if the public is hugely divided, the Congress is bound to be.
Paul Carver, what do you attribute this change to over the past 20 years?
Well, I think Dave probably characterized it better than I could. I'd say a couple of things that Dave might disagree with or want to refine. Firstly, I'd say that partisanship has always been a feature of American politics, dating back to the very first Congress and the very first administration, when you had Hamilton and Jefferson fighting it out within the first Washington administration. And it's the nature of the partisanship has changed through the years. Obviously, we went through a civil war, which was a dramatic time when partisanship was extreme. And I think it goes up and down. I would argue that from the 1930s for approximately 50 years, we had a broad consensus in the United States reflecting largely a Hamiltonian federalist approach, that the government was there. You wanted a strong central government with the power to tax and regulate commerce.
You're teaching in Virginia right now, which is, you know, the home of Thomas Jefferson.
I understand.
And yet you're an advocate of Hamiltonian principles.
I am, and I'm also an advocate of another great Virginian, John Marshall, the fourth Supreme Court of the United States, known as the definer of the nation. But it's true, Virginia has tended to fall into the anti-federalist camp, and I think if you understand the divide between the federalists and the anti-federalists in the late 1700s, early 1800s, it gives you insights into the kind of partisanship that we have going on today. And people shouldn't be too afraid of this. As I say, it's always been there. It's an important part of the American psyche. I do agree that it has changed somewhat in recent years. And to really understand that, you need to go back to the 1930s and understand the response of largely the business community to the New Deal. And the changes that we've seen largely since Ronald Reagan was elected didn't happen overnight. They were many years in the making, many decades in the making, dating back to the New Deal times.
Dave Obey, can you comment on what Paul Carver just said? What do you agree with? What do you disagree with?
Well, I guess what I would say is that there is a strong negative side that we haven't talked about. If I were to talk about my three biggest disappointments in my years in Congress, it would first of all be that we ran into a huge partisan opposition to the Economic Recovery Act after the bottom fell out of the economy in the last months of the Bush administration. Secondly, if you add to that what the Supreme Court has done with campaign finance, it has really come close to making politics impossible for average people. And then thirdly, if you take a look at the huge income disparity that has developed over the past generation, and I think that those negative trends are all generational. I think if the World War II generation were still in charge in the country, that they would recognize that there's more of a need to worry about we rather than me. And I think there would be a greater willingness for political leaders to see to it that the benefits of the society are spread a little more broadly. But as that World War II generation has faded out, we've lost the unifying mindset that you used to have when a generation that went through the Depression and World War II was running the show.
Dave Obey, he served 41 years in Congress, one of the most powerful congressmen during his tenure as the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. He's brought many public works into his district. He is here with us for the next half hour with his longtime senior policy advisor and legislative director, Paul Carver. We're talking about the David R. Obey Civic Resource Center, which will have 2 million of the congressman's papers and documents, access to those for young people who want to get involved in the political system. We'd like to hear from you. If you'd like to talk to Dave Obey or Paul Carver or comment on the need for young people to get involved in the political process, given these polarized times, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're tuned to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. Our guest today, longtime Wisconsin Congressman Dave Obey, who served for in the 7th District for 41 years. We've also got his legislative director, senior policy advisor, who worked with Dave for 28 years, Paul Carver. We're taking your questions at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go right to the phones. We have Judy in Tomahawk. Judy, you're on Route 51 with Dave Obey and Paul Carver.
Good morning. I am thoroughly enjoying the show, and the idea of having a place at the university in Wausau for students. The question I have is the lineup for the people you have going to speak at the grand opening sounds fantastic. Is that going to be recorded so people who are not going to be in the area on Wednesday night will be able to enjoy the program?
I would be willing to bet that it's going to be recorded, and if that detail of the program hasn't been taken care of yet, Judy, I will see to it that it is taken care of.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and I really appreciate your show.
All right. Thanks so much. You have a question for Dave Obey.
Just thank him so much for his excellent service. I've really enjoyed everything he's done for this area.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
All right, Judy, thanks so much for the phone call. 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742, if you'd like to talk to Dave Obey or his legislative director, Paul Carver, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it on the air. Dave Obey, how do you convince young people, given the polarization, given those factors that you just mentioned right before the break, the money in politics, the Supreme Court decisions, all of the other factors, how do you convince them that the political process is something they even want to get involved in, or that even reaching any kind of compromise through government is a possibility today?
Well, that's the very subject that I wanted to bring up, so I'm glad you asked that question. I hope that this facility will demonstrate to students that you can have an impact in politics. I know when I started as a student at the university center there, I had very little self-confidence. I didn't think that I could ever impact any of these great national issues. And yet, if you take a look 40 years later, if a student walks in that room and understands what I was able to do, I learned an awful lot at the University in Wausau and the University in Madison about politics and about myself, And I mean, as a result, I wound up for 10 years being chairman of the subcommittee that dealt with or that helped the Bush administration, for instance, Bush Sr., to deal with the collapse of the Iron Curtain and the collapse of the communist countries in Eastern Europe and the collapse of the Soviet Empire. For 15 years, I was the lead Democrat on the subcommittee that deals with health and education and social services, and we were able to do a lot to impact college students by way of added Pell Grants, able to do a lot to enhance medical research. I would never have dreamed when I started at the university that all of that would be possible. But if it was possible for me then, it's possible for some other person, some other young person today. And I hope that that's one of the messages that students will take away from their use of that facility.
Paul Carver, you teach at Virginia Tech. How do you reach young people who are apathetic, cynical, who don't think the political process is something that works, or that it's so dirty that no ethical person would even get involved in it?
Education is the only way you can reach people. And I have a love of history, and I try and teach my students through a greater knowledge of history to come to a better appreciation for the political system. And I'm somewhat a similar product to Dave. I came from the East End of London, was the first person in my family to go to college, and I got involved studying American politics, and then was very fortunate to have the opportunity to come and work in American politics. And to follow up on a point I made a little early about the difference between the Parliament in England and Congress, the Parliament in England, as I started to say, is very much dominated by the political parties. In Congress, there is much more opportunity for individual members of Congress to have a role to play. And I think that is true throughout American politics. It's much more open to individuals.
Well, there's an opportunity for it, but not many individuals are taking that opportunity. You see talking points being ventured. You watch cable television news, and you'll hear five different people, all from one party, saying exactly the same thing
and
in the same words.
Much of that is true, but the information is there for the inquiring minds. I think one of the important elements of this center is it's going to provide an opportunity for people to get beyond the headlines, get beyond the yelling that the network news likes to show, because that sells commercials.
Dave Obey, what about, we're talking about the reasons for apathy, for people not getting involved in politics. What about the role of rigging elections with gerrymandered districts so that the politicians are essentially choosing their voters instead of the voters choosing the politicians? Why should you even vote if you already know who's going to win because of the way the district is drawn?
Well, that's a good point. And there are a number of other problems like that as well that cause people to turn off on the system. There's no question that the way state legislatures have drawn legislative districts and congressional districts has been injurious to the public interest, because it has weakened the ability of the system to provide accountability. If people don't like what a politician has done, they ought to be able to vote him out of office. But if their district lines are drawn in such a way that those districts are hugely partisan, one party or the other, then you don't have a chance of a snowball and you know what, of actually including any kind of accountability in the system.
First time I've
and
heard.
When you add to that the money factor, I mean, when I got elected to the legislature, I spent $1,160. When Russ Decker was defeated in that Wausau district, he was ahead in the polls a week before the election, and with 1 week to go, they dumped $500,000 into the campaign against him and beat him. So that's
and there were some Dave Obey, there were some really vile mailings in that Russ Decker situation. And that's another thing. If you run for political office right now, you're going to be the target of negative ads. You're going to be the target of all of this money. Your reputation is going to be run through the mud. Who wants to put up with that?
Well, it's very hard. But also, I mean, if you're taking a look at what turns the public off, I think the public has taken a look at government and said, look at, you know, we used to have a fair distribution of economic opportunity in this country, and now that has really pretty much evaporated. And when they see that the wealthiest 1% of people in society have 50% or more of the nation's wealth, they think the system is rigged and that they shouldn't. You know, they shouldn't bother to get involved because they can't beat things.
I would
point out that that can change. The best example of that is the governor's race right now, where despite the fact that people have thought that Scott Walker, because he won the recall, was going to be a shoo-in for re-election, now you see in these public opinion polls by Marquette University that there's a real horse race on their hands. What it shows is if you have a good candidate and if they're reasonably well financed, they can compete even in today's political world. And so it is increasingly difficult. But if you don't try, you're going to miss opportunities to really change things.
Mary Burke is actually ahead by 2 percentage points in that Marquette poll. Paul Carver, you had something you wanted to add.
Yeah, Dave's absolutely right. There was a piece in USA Today about a new report by the Economic Policy Institute, which says that even people with good degrees and earning up to 90, they're in the 95th percentile, meaning they earn more than 95% of the American people. Even those people's wages are being eroded. They're earning less today than they were last year. And it's true that this does breed cynicism. What I try and tell my students is that you really have to make a distinction. Cynicism is destructive and try and avoid it at all costs, but skepticism is essential. Skepticism must be a part of your analysis of what's going on in Congress, but please try and avoid the cynicism.
Dave Obey, before we take a break, I want you to comment once again, as you've done before on this program, about the changes that were made to your own 7th District, lopping off Stevens Point and Wisconsin Rapids, which had been part of the district for a century. When I went to high school, I was taught that gerrymandering like that was a thing in America's dark political past, that now districts had to be contiguous and they had to keep communities of interest together. What's happened?
What's happened is that the Supreme Court has, through the years, modified its position on redistricting. And they have now, it's almost anything goes so long as the numbers come out even in terms of the population of each district. I mean, what happened in the 7th district, in my view, is disgraceful because for years, I mean, go back to what Governor Lee Dreyfus used to say about the need to look at Marathon, Wood, and Portage County as being one economic unit. He called it Ruraplex.
And Lee Dreyfus was a Republican.
Right, that's right. And yet today, for clearly partisan reasons, the legislature removed Portage County from the district because it was heavily Democratic. They removed Wisconsin Rapids from the district because it was significantly Democratic, and they cut out much of the area in Chippewa County because that was the county where Pat Kreitlow, the Democratic candidate, came from, and then they moved into the district St. Croix County, which has much more in common with the Mississippi River district, the third district in southwestern Wisconsin, rather than with the 7th district in northwestern Wisconsin. So it's an example of how the legislature has taken an action which is clearly partisan and clearly doesn't have anything to do with the public interest. Now, in spite of that, I would point out that that district is still competitive, but it is less so than it would have been if they had left the district in much the shape that it's been for the past 30 years.
Former 7th District Congressman Dave Obey and his longtime senior policy advisor Paul Carver with us for about another 12 minutes. If you've got something you'd like to say to either of them, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're talking about the grand opening of the David R. Obey Civic Resource Center with 2 million of the congressman's papers and an attempt to get young people interested in politics and public service. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We've got about another 8 minutes with Dave Obey and Paul Carver as we talk about the grand opening of the David R. Obey Civic Resource Center, which is next Wednesday, September 3rd, starting at 4:30 p.m., a great lineup of guests and speakers from both political parties, and that resource center will provide access to the congressman's 2 million documents and papers. Dave Obey, you were talking about how you were working on the fall of the Iron Curtain back in the George H.W. Bush administration. That's politically sensitive. Could involve national security issues. Are there some papers and documents that we won't have access to?
Oh, sure. I mean, there wouldn't be any classified information in those papers. And also anything that has to do, well, when constituents wrote me about a personal problem that they had or the help they needed with a government agency, those papers aren't going to be included because those people have a right to expect privacy. But pretty much virtually everything else is going to be around.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Ted, who's driving north on the highway right now. Ted, you're on Route 51, or maybe you're on a different highway.
Hey, thanks for putting me on. Nice program today. See, I have a son that's currently going to school at UW-Madison, and he's expressed some interest in politics, and I think he's just been exposed to it his first 2 years at school. And we got on the topic of why can't people compromise today? So much partisan politics, and you see Congressman Obey and others who have served many years get out, and I hear it every month. They say, you know, it's just not like it used to be. It's just so much partisan politics, and even in your home budget, everybody's got to be able to get along. Something has to go. Why can't we just compromise and make things work?
Well, that's the kind of politics that I was brought up to believe in. I mean, what politicians are supposed to do is to, first of all, define their differences so that the public understands the difference between a Democrat and a Republican when they go to the ballot box. But then once they've defined their differences, then they've got an obligation to try to resolve those differences. And that's where compromise comes in. And the problem is that today, it's been made much more difficult to resolve those differences, in part because some folks in this society with a lot of money don't want them resolved. And secondly, I just have to make this statement, and I hate to have to do it. But if you're President Obama, what would you have thought if you had learned that on the day that you were inaugurated, Eric Cantor, the leader of the Republican caucus in the House, that he had held a dinner at a downtown restaurant in Washington, and at that dinner, they had talked about their agenda to prevent the president from winning any victories on anything. Or when when we deal with the stimulus package, because the economy was collapsing and we needed to try to do something to strengthen consumer purchasing power, or we would have had a huge additional increase in unemployment. And when I sat down with my opposite member on the Appropriations Committee to try to put together a compromise package, I was told, Dave, don't bother. I've got orders from headquarters. We can't play. When that happens, the system doesn't work.
Dave Obi, I need
to. The difference is that the kind of politics that was practiced when I started, you had a lot of partisanship in the beginning of the process, but then people recognized that having made their political points, they then had to wrap it up and reach a compromise, and that's what's missing today.
Ted, thanks so much for the phone call. And Dave Obi, how much of the unrepentant opposition to President Obama is based on racism? He's the first black president, and if you look at what's happening in Ferguson and in cities all across America, we obviously are not in a post-racial America, which some naive people may have hoped would have happened with the inauguration of the first African-American president.
Well, I have no way of knowing how much. All I can say is that I think there are three sources of opposition. One is legitimate difference on substance, and that's always going to be present and should be. Second is the intrusion of partisan politics, where political operatives are so tempted by the chance to seize power that they will block anything that they possibly can. That's, a very large piece of it today. And then you also have some percentage of it, which no doubt is caused by a racist reaction. I don't know how much, but it certainly enters into it.
Dave Obi, we've only got 30 seconds left of the program. As always with you, it's gone much too fast. If you had just a few succinct sentences for young people wanting to get involved in politics, what would you tell them?
I would say you cannot afford not to be involved, because decisions are going to be made whether you're involved or not. And the only way that decisions are going to be made that are in the public interest is if young people with a sense of idealism get into it.
Dave Obi, thank you so much. Paul Carver, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We want to thank also Ann Lucas for her contribution to the program. Remember, it's September 3rd, next Wednesday, the grand opening of the David R. Obi Civic Resource Center, getting underway at 4:30 p.m. on the UW Marathon County campus.
Must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer blowing in the wind.
I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. If you missed part of the show, you can hear it again Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks again for riding along with us. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.